This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Future CEOs. We're talking today all about starting the investment journey. So you've decided that you want to invest. Where do we start? And this Future CEOs conversation is proudly brought to you by Coronation. Day in and day out. Since Coronation started 25 years ago, they've never stopped working to earn your trust and make your money work for you. Coronation. Trust is earned. Of course, what we do on Future CEOs every week is we bring in top experts, top individuals, top executives, where they share either their journeys or their insights to help us expedite this process of growth, growth of our business, growth in our careers, and in this case, growth of our portfolio and our wealth. Peter, welcome back to Future CEOs. You're the head of personal investments at Coronation, and I think you're the right person to speak to about this particular topic.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Peter, let me jump straight in with a bit of a different kind of question, because often what we hear is organizations saying invest, 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 but sometimes people have unrealistic expectations around investing. I think an appropriate question to start this conversation is, when should you not invest? It's a complicated world that we live in, and sometimes people do have unrealistic expectations. That's something that you are experiencing probably on a daily basis, is that right?
That is correct. I think that there are many different answers, and we can have a very long conversation just on this point. But the most important issue to understand is that all issues related to money, that's not about what you're going to spend tomorrow, really relates to the incredible power of compounding, the time value of money, the fact that returns accrue geometrically. Okay. But the converse of that is when you have borrowed money, that the cost of that borrowing over time also accrues geometrically. So, So if you start with that very simple concept of compounding, that's we by the way not really hardwired to think about unless we pause and slow down. Then it clearly doesn't make sense to invest with the hope of earning an investment return over time, while you have significant debts that need to be repaid.
Okay.
And especially if that is more short-term and expensive, or not asset-backed type debts. So, that scenario probably makes more sense to first get rid of the debt before you start thinking about investing.
Okay, so bring what you've just said, which may be a little bit jargony, and bring it into the real world for us. So what do you mean by expensive debt? So we're talking about potentially a big overdraft on a credit card, and that's expensive because often the interest rate there is very high, and you're saying until that's paid off, don't put money somewhere else. Am I on the right track?
That's exactly it. So sorry for the jargon. I mean, the essence of it is if you pay 10% or more in your annualized rate, in an annualized rate of interest, and if that debt was used for consumption, to buy stuff, probably get that paid off first before you start investing. The way that it works is a well put together, diversified investment portfolio, it doesn't matter how you choose to implement it, will give you a return of inflation plus 4 to 7 over the long run. That's what you sort of expect to earn. You know, so if inflation is around 4 or 5%, where we are at the moment, you're expecting to earn a return of somewhere between 8 and 12%. That's the reality. So if you pay 10% plus on short-term debt, you're effectively making somebody else wealthy because you are paying away the investment return to your lender. So rather get that sorted out before you start thinking about investing.
What you've highlighted is such an important part of all of this, and sometimes what we don't often look at, and you've mentioned it, and that's really the future value of money and the impact that something like inflation has on that. So if we're sitting with a pile of money in the bank, for example, and we think that we're in a good position, what we're actually doing is eroding value on our money over time, based on the fact that there are inflationary forces and money doesn't keep up with that. Again, am I on the right track?
Inflation is the enemy of the investor. Because if you think about what you're doing when you're investing, right? I mean, you're not putting money aside for some sort of amorphous other human being. I mean, it's mostly for you, future you. That's what you're putting the money aside for. And what you want is, if you wait patiently for 10 or 20 years Before you spend the money that you've set aside, you would like to have more money to spend than you would have had if you spend it today. Therefore, you need this earn that you need to earn a return that is ahead of inflation. And 4 or 5 or 6% a year doesn't sound like much, but as the period of time increases, that impact of compounding, because it's geometric and not linear, so because the line slopes upwards and doesn't stay straight, means that it very quickly adds up to become something very meaningful.
Yeah, this compounding effect, compounding growth, it really is, as we mentioned in the last conversation, one of those, the eighth wonder, because you at one point in the journey will look back and say, I wonder how in the world that happened, either positive or negative perhaps.
Yeah, exactly.
If I were to ask, what is Coronation's investment philosophy? And I mean, that's an appropriate question to be asking before the investment decision is made, is it not?
It is important. I think there is one more important question, though, before that.
Okay.
And that is, are you dealing with an institution or a business that is prepared to put your interests before their own? So, i.e., are you dealing with somebody that acknowledges and recognizes that it's always your money and that you are choosing to appoint somebody as a custodian to look after your money? So I think so any kind of arrangement where there are complicated exit processes, lock-ins, fees that need to be paid before your money can be released, all of those are bad for clients. You need to be invested in arrangements where within a day or two you can have your money back because it's your money. And unless there's some legal constraints that we may get into later with specific product structure. So there's a law that says you can't get the money, but then you need to be allowed to transfer it very seamlessly and easily and without cost to another provider,
Yeah, without
if
cost.
you so choose. So that's the first thing that needs to be gotten right.
Is that transparent information? I mean, are organizations very forthcoming with that? Is I guess maybe another way to ask that question is, I sit in front of someone that's trying to sell me a product. Are they obligated to share that information with me, or do I have to actually dig myself?
So you have to do a bit of digging, because the bigger the sting in the tail, I mean, you would tend to find the more difficult it would be to get the information. So that's normally how it works. There are some regulatory rules about information that need to be made available, but we have a relatively patchy system in South Africa where you don't have the same disclosure requirements and regulatory rules that apply to all types of investments. And that are available in the market just yet. I mean, so that's something the regulators are planning to address, but it's not quite there. So that is it is still a little bit of a need to do your own homework kind of environment. But the hint is, if it isn't explicitly and easily identifiable that it is easy to get your money back without incurring cost, that probably is a red flag.
Yeah, where there's smoke, there's fire, it seems.
That no, it's normally the way it works. So yeah, so once you've dealt with that issue, then you can talk about investment philosophy. And there are multiple different investment philosophies that can all work. So there's no market participant that with a birthright, a crystal ball, a black box, a magic algorithm that will always beat all other investment options out there. So there are lots of factors at play here. But the most important thing about an investment approach or philosophy is it needs to be simple and it needs to be understandable and it needs to be implemented consistently and with discipline. So in Coronation's case, if you simplify what we do down to two bullet points, it's first bullet point is if you have a long-term horizon, we think you have a competitive advantage because there's a lot of pressures in the system to focus on the short term, on this year and next year. And if you are prepared to look out 3, 5, 7 years, even 10 years into the future, you will be at an advantage to most market participants. If your time horizon is different to most market participants, the second bullet point then is you have to do your own research. You have to do your own work to assess where the opportunities that present most value. are available.
Okay, so I think that gives us a nice segue into the question of products, the opportunities that exist. There seem to be so many. How do we go about tentatively, at least at first, walking into what can often be quite an overwhelming field of different products? How does that decision work?
If you want to, again, simplify it, the three big ticket decisions that you need to get right as an investor. Number one is you need to know exactly what your need as an investor is.
Okay.
In fact, that just now. Number two, you need to understand the difference between a product or a tax wrapper, a way to optimize, call it the legal and tax consequences of your investment,
mm-hmm.
and decide how to implement that. From number three, which is the investment approach or the investment philosophy and methodology that you're going to use to achieve your need or your objective. So those are the three things. Make sure you know what your need is, and separate the decisions between legal structure, that's for tax and protection,
mm-hmm.
And investment strategy, that's for optimizing the return that you want to achieve mutually. So those are the three things to get right.
Peter, you know what I appreciate with what you're sharing is that there is a level of work that is required from us as consumers or us as investors that often is unseen, and it is an appropriate level of work because we can't just expect to come to an asset management firm or a fund and just say, here's my money, take it and run. To a certain extent, the onus is on you as an investor to do some of the work, to make some decisions and then own those decisions.
Exactly. It's all about framing, and you are more likely to get the results that are appropriate for you if you've chosen the right frame, if you've decided what you want to do. And it's not as difficult as it sounds, because at the first tier of need, there really are only three investor needs. It's long-term growth, where you want to have more spending power in future, so you want a return that's better than inflation, and you've got sort of 10, 20, 30, 40 years over which your investment horizon spans. It's immediate income, where you've got a fairly short period of time. You can't afford to take much risk. You're hoping to earn a better rate of interest than if you just leave the money in your bank account.
Mm-hmm.
But in the next year or two or three, you're going to need to access your capital. So it's that sort of immediate income need, where protection of capital is, in the short term, is much more important than the highest possible return.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third need is a combination of those two. So that's where you need to draw an income over a long period of time from your investment portfolio. So it's typically somebody in retirement that's living on passive income.
Mm-hmm.
But you also still need some growth to keep pace with inflation. So you need this sort of balance between I can take a lot of risk to earn growth approach, and I can take no risk because I want the money in the short term. So that's the need question. So it's not that difficult to figure out in which one of those three boxes you fit.
It certainly frames things, as you've used the word. It helps you to frame the decision where you want to be placing your money. It helps you to understand then the risk associated with that. So what you're allowing us to do is to frame very nicely, but the question remains for me, how do I know what I actually want? Because often we don't know what we want, we just want growth. Where does Coronation then come in? Or how do you approach someone who doesn't actually know what they want?
That's quite hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you mentioned the issue of unrealistic expectations. So somebody who doesn't know what they want, quite possibly going to end up with unrealistic expectations, because what happens in the investment world is that one of the biggest issues that you need to deal with is the concept of uncertainty. So many things can happen, only one thing will happen. Once the one thing that will happen has happened, it's quite obvious why that was the one thing that should have happened.
Sure.
So everything looks very different with the benefit of hindsight. And if you haven't upfront decided what it is that you want, then it becomes quite difficult to have a realistic evaluation of whether the outcome that you got was any good. The best sort of guidance that I can give to that point is that this DAS of realism, this DAS of what can be done, how things work, is a very important part of the process. And one of the big challenges for the investment industry is how do you deal with that? So the historical approach, and the one that's still by far the most prevalent one, is to say that because there are fairly complex emotional issues rather than necessarily technical issues that you need to deal with, it helps to make use of a trusted advisor. So vast majority of assets in the formal savings industry have been placed with the assistance of a financial advisor. So that's the historical approach. There's a lot of experimentation at the moment with algorithmic or automated advice and guidance processes. So to provide a better online experience to assist investors with its workout or sort of narrowing down exactly what the objectives are. And over the next few years, I mean that approach will become increasingly sophisticated. But in the end, you know, that you would have to do some work to figure out what it is that you want. So whether you do that work with an advisor or whether you do it as a self-directed investor using some kind of online tool, I mean, the bottom line is you are going to have to get to the point where you are comfortable with some of these decisions yourself.
That's a great point. There's an accountability here that we must take. Let's talk a little bit about choosing an advisor or a manager, because that is so important. Because I mean, quite frankly, there are going to be individuals in the world who you can trust and who you can't trust. Or how do we differentiate between those that we can and those that we can't? What are some questions that we could be asking ourselves and even those individuals that are potentially going to be managing our money? What questions should we be asking?
The typical approach adopted by most people is to put their trust in brands with a track record and a positioning that very focused and very dedicated to only do the job of investment. So independent investment brands such as Coronation have become the market leaders for that reason. For advisors, it's a little bit more complex because you've got one of two routes that you can take. So you can also put your trust in a brand. So probably about half of all investment advisors would work for a large financial institution, typically an insurance company or traditional insurance brand that's now a financial service conglomerate, or a bank. And so that's one route. So you can also follow the brand approach, or you can follow the independent approach. And one of the big advantage of the independent approach is that you are more likely to get an unbiased advisor that are really aligned to you and that are less conflicted and are providing more unbiased advice in terms of what they truly believe to be appropriate for you.
And you're talking about an unbiased view because they may represent various different products rather than a brand that represents only their products. Is that correct?
So, absolutely. So if you talk to me, it's quite clear that I'm not unbiased because I represent Coronation Fund Managers. So, so everything that I say, you have to filter through the understanding that I truly believe in Coronation. That's why I've been here for a long time.
Yeah, 20 plus years.
That my view of the world would be shaped by Coronation's view of the world and Coronation's interests. An unbiased advisor should be completely free from any financial interest or link to a product supplier or a fund manager such as ourselves, so that they can objectively assess whether they believe what we say is appropriate and correct, and whether they objectively believe that a fund manager such as ourselves is appropriate for inclusion in a client portfolio. And without fear or favor, if you believe that there's something better to do with the client's money, to then make that switch and change, given all the consequences of a decision like that into account. So an unbiased advisor is on the side of the investor, of their client. It's more difficult to find them typically because they tend to be smaller businesses that are not as well branded. I mean, a good starting point for that is to look at the Financial Planning Institute's membership. So those are the advisors with the highest standard of professional education, subject to a code of ethics. So acting as professionals. They've got a website called letsplan.co.za.
Okay.
That you can help, that can, where you can Either find advisors or that you can use to check that whether an advisor has the skills to do the job offered.
I did a little bit of research around this idea of trying to find someone, and one or two other questions that I think are fairly important, not fairly important, probably very important, my top three anyway, is fee transparency. And the question around that is, how do you actually make your money? Because that really does tell you a lot about the extent to which this person is invested in you and your money's growth, I think. The other one was, and to I think your point, which is regulatory controls. Are they members of some kind of body? Are there safeguards in place? And then the other one was also experience. To your point of the institutions, Coronation being one of them, you yourself being with Coronation for 20 plus years, that's where suddenly this experience thing becomes really important. Just a word or two around fees from yourself.
It's a topic that has become quite controversial. There's a lot of noise around fees, and rightly so, because effectively the fee that you pay reduces the end value of your investment, and paying a high fee for a substandard outcome will leave you much worse off. So there's a lot of focus on fees at the moment. A lot of the noise about fees come from the passive investment industry. So it's a debate that's been ongoing for the last decade or so between active managers such as ourselves and passive managers, who say, you know, it's hard to outperform, so let's not try. The benefit of that is it makes things cheaper. So that debate is not settled by any means, and has been ongoing for years now. So that put more emphasis on fees, and that's good. The question really is about value for money. What is the net after fee outcome that you receive as an investor? And if that is meaningfully better than the average alternative or the market index, then the fee that was the input wasn't that much of a problem. Having said all that, I think we are in an environment where, in terms of a fee for investment management and administration of your investment account, and for those two elements, inclusive of value added tax, should probably not exceed 1.5% or so. So that roughly would be a guide. And that's both fund management and admin. And I don't want to get too technical, but roughly speaking, you probably shouldn't pay more than around 1%. For the investment management component, and more than 0.5% for the admin component, and probably less. And for advice fees, the typical sort of rate would be something between 0.5% and 0.75%. So that's sort of where the market pricing is at the moment. The key question becomes, what is the value that I receive in return for the fees that I pay? So if I pay 0.5% fee premium, but I receive a net benefit of 1.5% or 2% in higher returns, the 0.5% fee is not that relevant.
Yeah.
If I don't receive the benefit, clearly then it becomes a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Peter, thank you. This is a really rich conversation. You're helping a lot of us to be able to clear some of the smoke that sometimes gets in the way of us being able to make clear decisions. I'm going to keep on asking you questions until you tell me to stop. I do want us to quickly talk a little bit about, you spoke about the three different types of needs. And then there, of course, are going to be products that are connected to those kinds of needs. Maybe you can just give us an idea of what is available. So let's talk about investing for immediate income for a moment, then we'll go into income and growth, and then we'll do the long-term capital growth component. Immediate income, what I want to sound intelligent here, what's favorable when it comes to immediate income product offerings?
So immediate income, you've got an investment horizon up to 3, maximum 5 years. So you're in the territory where your sort of baseline or benchmark product becomes something like a fixed deposit at a bank, or a retail savings bond issued by Treasury. That will give you a known yield or rate of interest that you can earn. In the investment industry, we would run we run funds, managed income funds, in Coronation's case, strategic income. And what we try and do is to give a return that is a little bit better than you can get fixed deposit without increasing the risk profile. Beyond that, so, I mean, so you are in a space where if you want to return higher than that than you would earn in cash, you do have to take a little bit more risk, but you constrain that risk. So you try with a high level of confidence to deliver returns that are not too far off cash when things go wrong. So you want sort of, if you can get 6.5% as a money market rate of interest in the current environment, you would want your managed income fund to give you a return in that sort of interest rate environment of somewhere between, say, 3.5-4%, up to 10% in a really great outcome. But you want to stay fairly close to that sort of cash type return. So that's basically the short answer. When you start with, I mean, the bank deposits or retail savings bonds as less risky implementation vehicles. If you take a little bit of market risk, you'd probably do so through a managed income fund.
Yeah, and we're not talking about huge amounts of risk. We're talking about small amounts in terms of the difference between what you're describing.
Correct. I mean, so just to give you a practical example, you would invest in instruments, debt instruments issued by, for example, banks with a term of, say, 2 years rather than 32 days. So it's not like it's not a call or an overnight deposit. It's a slightly longer term deposit. The bank pays you more interest for committing to a longer period. But in exchange for that, if interest rates were to move next week, and that same 2 year deposit made a week or two later, would then pay a higher rate of interest, you won't get the benefit of that because you've now locked in a rate for a period. So the risk is at that level. So it's fairly moderate and benign. So so there are the potential in some of the underlying instruments for small negative price movements, but the way you put them together in the portfolio, it's highly unlikely that you will have a negative return over a 3 month period. As I said, you can expect a return not too far off cash. In any given 12-month period.
Negative moves are always going to be around, and that's the risk that we're talking about. Then we move into a different need, which is income and growth. That's a little bit more complicated. How does one then navigate that?
That's the toughest of the needs to do well. It really is quite hard because what you are looking at is an investor that now has a pool of capital and needs to drawn income from this pool of capital, and it's typically an investor with a long time horizon. So, I mean, if you think about the typical retirement environment, so most people would like to retire somewhere in their 60s. Life expectancy when you're in your early 60s in South Africa is around 20 years, in your early 80s. So half of people in their early 60s will live longer than 20 years, you know, so you sort of you're talking about up to a 30-year type time horizon that you need to plan to make your income last. At a 4.5% inflation rate, you know, you're going to need your capital base to maybe triple or quadruple over the time horizon to protect your purchasing power. So, but this all happens while you need to draw 4 or 5 or 6%, whatever the percentage is, of your portfolio every year for current living expenses. So that's because you need to do both of these things, it's quite tough. So the way that you try and meet that need, or the way that we try and fund that need in an appropriate way, is through multi-asset portfolios with moderate risk budgets. So sorry for the jargon, but means, it's a fund that can invest in a lot of different asset classes, but where we constrain the amount of the capital that we put at risk or shorter market movements. So you would have a limit on the amount of exposure that you'll have to the equity markets and to property, for example. And you try and balance the capital stability in the portfolio with a rate of growth that's still around 3-4% ahead of inflation to allow you to draw a growing income from that portfolio over time. So
naturally here there has to be a little bit more risk.
The additional risk is introduced by the need to make capital last, over an investment period while you're drawing while you're drawing down money. And this typically happens in a life stage where the investor has less opportunity to replace lost capital. So if you're 40 and working, if something goes wrong, there's enough time to reinvent yourself and try something else.
Yes.
There's hope.
Yep,
If
yep.
you're 70 and retired, I mean, you're probably at sort of peak capital. I mean, you're probably not going to, there are less opportunities to, through the sort of the sweat of your brow, through your labor, to go and augment a capital base. So that makes it a tougher investment objective.
Let's then jump into the last one, which is the long-term capital growth. It feels like long-term capital growth, but again, depending on risk appetites, would be a fairly safe way or approach to be to investing.
So the great benefit here is if you remind yourself, and that's why that upfront framing is so important. So if you remind yourself that this is a multi-decade endeavor, that I've got lots of time, it's by far the coolest place to be as an investor. There's no doubt about that, because if you remember that you've got a long time horizon, you don't have to get stressed out about big moves in capital value in the short term. So you don't get stressed by the market going down 5% in a month because there's the market throwing a tantrum because it's worried about Donald Trump starting a trade war with the Chinese.
Yeah, I mean,
So
I'm having heart
that's math.
palpitations already.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or you don't get too stressed out that you've got 4% or 3% of your portfolio and Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg allowed other people to steal the user's data. So it's
Yeah.
like that stuff doesn't stress you out because you know that there's so much time still that needs to elapse that you can recover from the daily gyrations of the market. So that enables you to have more risky assets or more growth assets in your portfolio, to have a higher expected return. And because there's no path dependency, sorry, more jargon, but you don't have the same problem that the income and growth investor has, where next year's outcome or the year after's outcome can be quite badly impacted by a tough year this year.
Good
Um,
point.
so you have the ability to withstand a higher risk profile, and therefore you can invest in assets that over time are much more likely to give you better returns and better outcomes. So again, for the simplest approach is a multi-asset fund to meet the long-term growth need, and one that can balance exposure across asset classes, both in South Africa and in global markets outside of South Africa. I mean, obviously, you can make that more complicated if you want to, and you can have all kinds of strategies, but that's the simplest way of doing it.
Yeah, I did want to talk about the local versus abroad thing in these kinds of products and funds. What we're going to see, as you've highlighted, is various asset classes. Also, we're going to see, and I'm going to just use my semi knowledge of this here, but we're going to see multi-industry or investments. But then we also are going to see local investing and investing abroad. Is there a one or the other approach here? Are we able to just go abroad because we feel like that is right, or do you pull the reins there and say, look, actually, abroad isn't as peachy as you think it is, just because there's some concerns and perhaps uncertainty here in South Africa?
Yes, again, it's a big topic. But the basic answer in investments always prudence, diversification, and owning a portfolio that can give you a decent outcome under a variety of different paths that the future may take. And that's why you diversify. So it's really a good idea to just have investments in South Africa, or to just have all your investments offshore. So the right blend between the two depends very much on personal circumstances. And so not all families are the same. And so there are no straightforward answers. The starting point is, if you look at what's called the prudential regulations that apply to retirement funds, that basically says a good asset allocation for a retirement investor is to have not more than 30% of your assets abroad, not more than 10% invested in the rest of Africa, not more than 75% of your investments in shares. So that's sort of a starting point for how to allocate the risk budget. So that's the sort of That's the sort of, call it the core allocation decision that the entire South African savings industry is organized around, because that's the way, those are the rules that the bulk of the money is managed to. But that sort of allocation is consistent with an expectation of earning a return of inflation plus 5 or 6% over time for a Rand investor. So that's sort of a good starting point. But what you must remember is that there's a continuum that runs from prudent long-term investing on the one extreme to outright speculation and day trading on the other extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff we do may, from a day-to-day basis, look a bit boring because it's closer to that prudent, diversified, long-term investment portfolio. But it's also proven to be sustainable, and it's also considered responsible in the way that you manage risk.
I must step in there and say there's nothing boring about the rates of return that you guys are offering on a consistent basis. I've seen it. I'm very attracted to it. There's nothing boring about that.
I'll take that.
As our conversation draws to a close, I do want to just ask two very quick questions. So first, there are going to be a lot of the people who are listening to this, our listeners, our future CEOs community that are entrepreneurs. They are married to some of their businesses. It always is a very, very close relationship there. How do you protect this your personal investments from this business risk?
I think we briefly touched on this in our prior conversation, because the big issue here is that if you are an entrepreneur, you should pour every ounce of your energy into your business, because that's going to make it much more likely that you're going to be successful. There will probably be always more opportunities than you have capital to pursue, so you would want to have most of your capital invested in your business as well. That's also understandable. However, I mean, from a risk management point of view, it does make sense to have a little bit of money set aside specifically for retirement in a more diversified type portfolio. And one of the attractive benefits of, you know, remember I talked about investment strategies, the funds that we spend most of the session on, and products, which are the tax wrappers or the protection legal structures that you can use to house assets. And one of the great attractions of retirement assets is that you have protection from most creditors in the case of insolvency for your retirement savings. So basically how it works is if you buy a retirement annuity fund, which is just a tax wrapper to give you the retirement benefits, the sort of key trade-off that you need to make is you need to understand that you get tax breaks, which is good, but because you get the tax breaks, you get the tax breaks solely because this is money that will fund your retirement, which means you're not going to ask government to give you an old age pension. Therefore, you can't access this money until you turn 55, protected, even from you, until you reach age 55. But at the same time, it's protected from creditors. In the case of insolvency, so the only credit you can't get away from is SARS, unfortunately. So if you own an income tax, they can take some of your RO money, but none of your other creditors, in the case of insolvency, would be able to access the fund. So that is a great vehicle to give you some protection against the vagaries and the risk of being in business for your own account.
I love what you said, which was even protection against yourself.
Sometimes we need that.
Yeah, and we do. Sometimes we make foolish decisions, and that sounds like a really good way to be able to protect your future. Finally, we've spoken about a lot. It's really, in essence, been a masterclass on how to start investing, and so we're very, very grateful. These kind of conversations often result in more questions being needed to answer. Where do we go to seek this kind of advice?
You either need to be prepared to do a lot of work yourself.
Yes.
And it's not only the technical stuff, it's also the emotional stuff. And there's a lot you can read online, and increasingly you're starting to see more sophisticated and guidance or automated advice processes that can give you a feel for the sort of planning tool. So you can certainly, with some work, do it self-help. Many investors still believe that figuring out who a trusted advisor is, it's a little bit like finding a GP or a dentist. So test drive a few, if you find one that you connect with and that you really like, it can make a big difference over time.
Peter, our conversation has come to an end, rather not because I don't have any more questions, but rather just because we've run out of time. Thank you so very much for your time. Peter Kukumud, Head of Personal Investments from Coronation. Thank you, Peter.
Great. Thanks. Good chat.
This Future CEO's conversation was proudly brought to you by Coronation. Ups, downs, good days and bad. Since Coronation started 25 years ago, through the highs and lows, they work every day to make your money work for you. Coronation. Trust is earned.
A lot can happen in a day. A lot has happened since the day Coronation started 25 years ago. The first democratic election in 94, rugby champions in 95, two Nobel Peace Prize winners, one indomitable Nkosi Johnson. But there was also the 2008 crash and global recession. Then, what a day when we kicked off the World Cup. South Africans united, we pushed on and believed.
Unbelievable, unbelievable.
From the day Coronation started, through the highs and the lows, we've worked every day to earn your trust and make your money work for you. To invest your money today, visit coronation.com. Coronation. Trust is earned. Coronation is an authorized financial services provider and approved manager of collective investment schemes.
This is CliffCentral.com.